Chapter 1. A Woman Named Thursday Next.
The Special Operations Network was instigated to handle policing duties considered either too unusual or too specialized to be tackled by the regular force. There were 30 departments in all, starting at the more mundane neighborly disputes, SO30, and going on to literary detectives, SO27, and art crime, SO24. Anything below SO20 was restricted information, although it was common knowledge that the Chrono Guard was SO12 and anti-terrorism SO9. It is rumoured that SO1 was the department that polices the Special Ops themselves. Quite what the others do is anyone's guess. What is known is that the individual operatives themselves are mostly ex-military or ex-police and slightly unbalanced. If you want to be a Special Op, the saying goes, act kinda weird.
Millen de Floss, A Short History of the Special Operations Network. My father had a face that could stop a clock. I don't mean that he was ugly or anything. It was a phrase the Chrono Guard used to describe someone who had the power to reduce time to an ultra-slow trickle. Dad had been a colonel in the Chrono Guard and kept his work very quiet. So quiet, in fact, that we didn't know he had gone rogue at all until his timekeeping buddies raided our house one morning, clutching a seize and eradication order, open-dated at both ends, and demanding to know where and when he was. Dad had remained at liberty ever since. We learned from his subsequent visits that he regarded the whole service as morally and historically corrupt, and was fighting a one-man war against the bureaucrats within the Office for Special Temporal Stability. I didn't know what he meant by that, and still don't. I just hoped he knew what he was doing, and didn't come to any harm doing it. His skills at stopping the clock were hard-earned and irreversible. He was now a lonely itinerant in time, belonging to not one age, but to all of them, and having no home other than the chronoclastic ether. I wasn't a member of the Chrono Guard. I never wanted to be. By all accounts, it's not a huge barrel of laughs, although the pay is good, and the service boasts a retirement plan that is second to none. A one-way ticket to anywhere and any when you want. No, that wasn't for me. I was what we called an operative grade one for SO27, the literary detective division of the Special Operations Network, based in London. It's way less flash than it sounds. Since 1980, the big criminal gangs had moved in on the lucrative literary market, and we had much to do and few funds to do it with. I worked under Area Chief Boswell, a small, puffy man who looked like a bag of flour with arms and legs. He lived and breathed the job. Words were his life and his love. He never seemed happier than when he was on the trail of a counterfeit Coleridge or a fake Fielding. It was under Boswell that we arrested the gang who were stealing and selling Samuel Johnson first editions. On another occasion, we uncovered an attempt to authenticate a flagrantly unrealistic version of Shakespeare's lost work, Cardinio. Fun while it lasted, but only small islands of excitement among the ocean of day-to-day mundanities that is SO27. We spent most of our time dealing with illegal traders, copyright infringements, and fraud. I had been with Boswell and SO27 for 8 years, living in a Maidervale apartment with Pickwick, a regenerated pet dodo left over from the days when reverse extinction was all the rage and you could buy home cloning kits over the counter. I was keen. No, I was desperate to get away from the Literatex, but transfers were unheard of and promotion a non-starter. The only way I was going to make full inspector was if my immediate superior moved on or out. But it never happened. Inspector Turner's hope to marry a wealthy Mr. Wright and leave the service stayed just that, a hope. As so often, Mr. Wright turned out to be either Mr. Liar, Mr. Drunk, or Mr. Already Married. As I said earlier, my father had a face that could stop a clock.